This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 158B. Page 671, we're discussing Uranus, the mystery planet. And this we've seen many times, that Uranus is one of the three synthesizing planets and Sirius influences our entire solar system via Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn. And I think here's how we can look at it, this influence, which I may have said before, but via Uranus, the law of freedom from Sirius. Via Neptune, the brilliant star of sensitivity. Via Saturn, the intermediate law of karma. So, freedom, sensitivity, and karma, these are the three influences, and the three influences available now. I'm writing in a very Leo, Sirius time between two full moons, which are Sirian Leo full moons. What a great opportunity this is. Uranus is the home of electric fire, and so this fits with its first ray monad. With its first ray monad. There are other planets which may seem outwardly more destructive, like Mars, for instance, even Saturn in some ways, but the monad is held in reserve, and the destruction of all that does not fit the archetype is the province of Uranus. I'll write that. The destruction of all that does not fit the archetype is the province of Uranus. Okay. Well, a very important planet, very important to the Earth. I think, was the Earth born from Uranus? How does the mythology go here? Let's see. Earth born from Uranus? Maybe. Uranus had been castrated, his blood fell to Earth, Gaia, and conceived from the blood that fell was born the nymphs and giants. Okay. She was an early earth goddess, and it is written that she was born from chaos. She gave birth to Pontius, the sea, and to Uranus, the sky. Ah, Earth gave birth to Uranus. Is this possible? We have to interpret these all in an esoteric manner. An earth goddess, and it's written that Gaia was born from chaos, the great void or emptiness within the universe, and with her came Eros. She gave birth to Pontus the sea and Uranus the sky. So, it's the other way around. Other versions say that Gaia had a sibling, had as siblings Tartarus, the lowest part of Earth, below Hades itself, and Eros, and without a mate gave birth to Uranus the sky. So it's exactly the reverse of what I said. Well, that's what one studies these things for, to try to come up with what is the truth of these matters. Let me just check something here. Right. Okay. The planet Venus, it's going to be an important one. Secret doctrine and a treatise on cosmic fire. Since it is our Earth's alter ego and the planet which is most intimate and with Earth and the twin sister of Earth and the planet which sort of sets the tone for Earth. Earth should now be in its fifth, I think, scheme round, I would call it. Maybe DK could use the word planetary round, perhaps. Or maybe planetary round simply means chain round, I thought to be as specific as possible. Venus has no satellite and is far older than the Earth. Older in terms of this solar system, we ask. In terms of this, or older in the appearance, older in relation to our solar logos and his earlier systems. Or, well, it's as if far older than the Earth, and yet they are twin sisters who should be moving together at this time. And Mercury is far older than any other planet, and older than Venus. With Mercury, Venus and the Earth, with Mercury, Venus, and Earth, we have a proportion of suggestive numbers. 7, 3, 1. We're told that Mercury receives 7 times more light than the Earth. And Venus receives 3 times more light than the Earth. And therefore, Venus, Mercury receives more than twice as much light as Venus. No satellite. What are the... Well, it even seems that Pluto may have a satellite, or at least that there's a grouping of heavenly bodies there that might be construed to all be part of the same system. Is Pluto really the center of it? Even the planet or planetoid called Nix, put the Nix on it. It's quite a planet of negativity. Eris is farther out. Charon, the ferryman that takes you across the river Styx so that you may reach Hades. All these are associated with Pluto. Neptune has satellites. Uranus does, moons, or satellites. Jupiter certainly does. Saturn does. The big ones do. Mars has 2 kind of satellites, and we're told that he's not entitled to them. The Earth doesn't really have a satellite. It has a moon, and then when we're looking at some of these planetoids that are apparently around these larger planets, which of them really are satellites, and which of them may be moons, which suggest an earlier incarnation of the central planet. So Earth really has no satellite, even though, and then as we move in, maybe it's because of their size or closeness to the Sun, but Venus doesn't, and Mercury doesn't, and we assume Vulcan does not. So the satellites, or the planetoids, or the circumplanetary planetoids, as there are probably planetoids that go around the Sun per se, he seems to suggest it. And is far older than the Earth. But, you know, when we're talking about older, does older mean more advanced? More unfolded? Well, we do know this, that Earth will not last, or does not last, throughout the entire Mahamanvantara, and Venus does. So if Earth began in a way later than Venus, then Venus would be older. But we have to look back, I think, to the previous incarnations of our solar logos as well. Venus is the little sun in which the solar orb stores his lights. Well, are the solar angels the lights, light beings of an angelic nature? Because the solar angels are certainly connected to Venus as well as to the sun. The little sun in which the solar orb stores his lights. So perhaps these are light beings from the sun who also have a kind of temporary dwelling in Venus. So, you know, angelic light beings with a dwelling or focus on Venus. So angelic solar light beings. Anyway, both are principles of luminosity. And at the Enlightenment initiation, transfiguration, Satori, awakening, of the third degree, both are involved, Venus through the fifth ray and the Sun as the general symbol of illumination. But by the time we get to the fifth degree, it's more the Sun than it is Venus that indicates mastership. Light comes through Venus, who receives the triple supply and gives one-third to Earth. Well, the Sun gives a triple supply, three times more than Earth receives. But this is not about outer light. It's about luminous beings or light beings. So then Earth, if a third is given to Earth by whatever means, we have to perhaps look at these exchanges that involved individualization and the illumination of mankind and so forth, then Venus will have twice as much as the Earth, because two-thirds is two times the one-third that is given away. So there is the donor relationship between Venus and the Earth, but let us remember, according to DK, that Earth gave even more to Venus than Venus gave to Earth. Now, let's just say that in what we learned before, Venus receives three times the light of Earth, but gives one-third. So we have one-third and one-third equals two-thirds. There's a real sharing going on here, a real Libran sharing. Because if Venus has three-thirds and Earth has one-third, to start out with, Venus gives away another third, so now Earth has two-thirds and Venus has two-thirds. And this may have to do with, all this may have to do with the number of light beings which are resident on and in both planets. There is definitely an occult relationship, and who is to say too much about the kinds of relationship that exist between planetary logoi? We can barely understand relationships with between masters, such as Master M and KH. It must be very deep and of long standing and based on certain rays and a great many experiences, and who is to say we can understand that? In a way, it's none of our business, but in a way, the result of it has been a great giving to humanity. Those two were the ones who wanted to bring the ageless wisdom closer to humanity. They had a lot of faith in humanity, and others resisted that, which is interesting. All right, moving. And therefore, the two are called twin sisters. Okay, well, there it is, because there is equality of light, or of light beings, but definitely Earth is the recipient. The spirit of the Earth is subservient to Venus. Now, by spirit of the Earth, does she mean the same thing as DK means when he says spirit of the Earth? If we look up here again, this term, spirit of the Earth, we have 26 references to it, and it is not, on a physical plane, a mysterious synthesis of the spirit has undergone and Spirit of the Earth, Power of the Spirit of the Earth, the planetary entity, not the planetary logos. That refreshes and defines what it is. So I don't think HBB means that. That's my guess. My guess is she means, I don't think HBB does not mean to use, or does not use this term in the same way as DK does, the Spirit of the Earth, Spirit of the Earth, of the Earth is the what's called planetary entity. But HBB means a logos, I'm almost certain. So the Spirit of the Earth is subservient to Venus. Well, the Spirit of the Earth is even subservient to our planetary logos. But this places the two in a hierarchical relationship. And Venus is the teacher, the illuminator, the guide, the donor. Of course, Earth also donates, as we've been told. Venus is the most occult, powerful, and mysterious of all the planets. Yet, we are told that Mercury is older and more occult than Venus. Suffice it to say, we can understand that just as the path to Sirius is difficult for us to comprehend and is veiled in mystery, so the real nature of Venus, a kind of lower analog to Sirius, is also occult and basically mysterious to human beings, even though it is for us a great teacher, as is the Solar Logos, as is Sirius. Three great teachers at three different levels. So we'll have to reserve judgment about whether Venus is the most occult, because I think if we look Mercury, see, Mercury, far, Mercury, occult. More. Let's try that. Most occult. More and more. In this case, Uranus, the occult planet. Mercury is still more occult and mysterious than Venus. Oh, there we go. So it seems like a direct contradiction. And this one we have just dealt with a little earlier when dealing with Mercury on page 663. Now we're in the 670s. So let's copy this from 663. Secret Doc, Esoteric Astrology 663. And okay. Maybe I can access the ruler. And in that case, keep things more or less in alignment. So this is what HBB said, and it gives us another perspective, which is almost, I think, a contradiction. I don't know how we can reconcile these. We'll have to check the context. Its relation with the Earth is the most prominent. Well, this we do understand, that Mercury, that Venus is for Earth the most powerful and prominent as Sirius is for soul. It presides over the natural generation of men, so this is the relationship of Venus to sex, but DK says to look at this symbolically, because Venus has been associated with the union of the pairs of opposites, it's also associated with sex. But we also know practically that beauty attracts and stimulates the sacral center. So, beauty stimulates the sacral center. So it is true in a very exoteric way. It is called the other sun, because for earth beings, it is so luminous. It's the second, well, maybe third greatest luminary. The sun, the moon, and then Venus. But the sun is a central star, and the moon is shining by reflected light, and is not alive, and Venus is representing the soul. So when looking at the sun and Venus, we have the symbols of the spirit and soul. It is the earth's primary or spiritual prototype. We are to become as Venus is and could have been had we not failed on the moon chain, which is deeply, I think, ingrained in the psyche of human beings, even though it's not realized. And that sense of failure, that inferiority complex carried by so many, may not have much to do with one's personhood at all, but with a great planetary failure in which many of the more advanced human beings did participate. The planetary logos of Venus loved the Earth so well that he incarnated and gave it perfect laws which were disregarded and rejected. So, you know, what incarnated? What incarnated on Earth? The logos of Venus, or representatives of the logos of Venus in the form of the solar angels and the lords of the flame? Maybe that. It doesn't say where he incarnated, but we do have a Venus chain, we have a Venus globe of the Venus chain, we have a Venus globe of the Earth chain, and all of this began to take place on the Earth globe of the Earth chain. But there is a story of love here. So we can never really have in astrology a conjunction of Venus and the Earth, because the Earth can only be represented in the chart from a heliocentric perspective. We can have the opposition to the Earth, the Sun-Venus conjunction. We cannot have a square. The most we can have is about 45 degrees on either side, which would give a sesquiquadrate from the Earth. The Earth is always seen then, if it's legitimate to use a heliocentric patterning in the chart, when it's mostly a geocentric chart. But the, you know, in a funny kind of way, there are no strictly harmonious aspects between Venus and the Earth. We can have the opposition, we can have the inconjunct, or this quincunx, as it's called, of 150 degrees. We can have pretty much the sesquiquadrate, and that's it. We cannot have the biquintile, maybe something of the septile, in the septile series, I'm not sure, I'd have to work that out. But let's just say that the Earth is trying to become like Venus within its ray limits, just as the personality is trying to become like the soul. And there are many battles here. Venus is always exerting a positive effect, but not always the most comfortable effect on the Earth, because it demands a high degree of spiritual refinement and purity. Interesting here. Every sin committed on Earth is felt in Venus. Every change in Venus is reflected on Earth. So, you know, via Gemini, you have the what can be called divine reciprocity. And this reminds us, of course, that Venus is the esoteric ruler of Gemini. And the two are, you know, when you have Gemini, you can have two sisters, you can have one brother and one sister, you can have two brothers. It doesn't make any difference. Siblings are ruled by Gemini. So there's a great sensitivity here. We don't know who does the feeling. I must say, if this is the case, Venus must be very much pained at the present time. But the changes and success of Venus are registered as positive indications, positive streams of energy on the Earth. Venus is the light bearer of our Earth, both in the physical and mystic sense. It's a most illumined planet, brightest in the night sky. But sponsors, in a planetary sense, the light of initiation. So we're told that our initiations are Sirian, yes, but Venus is closely related to Sirius, so our initiations are also, in a way, a Venusian. And of course, they are solar. There is a close relationship between Sirius, Sol, or Helios, our sun, and Venus. It is with the regent of Venus, the planetary logos of Venus, that occult mysticism has to deal. Well, the fusion of subject and object in contemplation, ruled by Libra, Venus is the objective of mysticism. Of course, it's called occult mysticism here, maybe a little bit of occult mysticism is rational mysticism. Okay. Humanity, which appeared in Lemurian days, is said to be under the direct influence of Venus. And there is this connection, we'll just call it Sun, Venus, Venus chain, oh, that's Vulcan. VC, Venus chain of the Earth scheme, Venus globe of the Venus chain, Venus globe of the Earth chain, and Earth globe of the Earth chain. This is a line of descent here. And humanity was conceived on the Earth globe by the coming in of the solar angels, which shot forth from the bow, as it were, 21 million years ago. All of this, we could say that individualization is, well, let's do it in red. Individualization is under the sponsorship of Venus. Sun, Venus, and then the factors within Earth which are resonant to Venus. So in a way, the fifth ray enters in Lemuria in a very primitive sense, giving under the law of cleavage, a sense of distinction between the observer and that which is observed, which did not exist before. So, in other words, Venus holds up the mirror to the observing consciousness and allows it to observe itself. So, you have to wonder about the moment when the observer becomes aware that he exists. When does the observer become aware that he exists? Venus, in relation to Leo, could give this. And also Venus in relation to Gemini, both of which, Leo and Gemini, were active at the time of individualization. There's objectivity here that is possible, and not just the participation in all that is seen without being able to discriminate the one who sees. This sense that there is a one who sees, oftentimes arrived at through the intensity of pain within the one who sees, attention is drawn to that pain which is clustered around the center, or through pain or pleasure, we might say, and the experiencer begins to emerge. Okay. So, in a lower sense, we are under the influence of Venus, and later, at first, we were under the influence of Venus. At first, we were under the influence of Venus, and then later. Now, it seems to me that I also did not this idea of the perfect laws of the God Kings, I did not emphasize this. Our law system, our system of laws, is meant to approximate the perfect laws given via Venus. They are beautiful, they are geometrical, they are fair, reciprocal, and lead to the advancement of all concerned. So Libra is law, and Venus is the ruler, and Saturn is also a ruler of Libra. Okay. Getting there. Perfect laws. The God Kings gave perfect laws. Did beings from Venus actually incarnate? Well, the solar angels actually incarnated in the human form, in the animal man, form of animal man. Must have been a very great sacrifice. One could think of analogies, probably very unpleasant analogies. It's like, taking, if you live in a nice house, reasonable house, and you take up residence in the worst kind of slum where the rats are running around and the garbage has been kept out for a long time and decay and bad odors and lack of sanitation, all that kind of thing. That's probably mild compared to what it was for solar angels to take up residence in a huge tabernacle of clay. This we looked at before. The sun Sirius is the source of logoic mind, manas, in the same sense as the Pleiades are connected with the evolution of mind. Well, one is the source and one is the connection, and that's what we have to differentiate. So, differentiate a source from a connection. In a way, of course, as I said before, soul has mind, the planetary logo have mind, they are dragons of wisdom, they have mind, but there's a special type of stimulation that goes on. And the Pleiades are involved in the evolution of mind, but there seems to be a very great, I don't know, is it possible? A cosmic solar angelic conferral engineered by the Logos of Sirius, an intervention. Yes, there is a solar angel for the solar logos, this we have learned. And so, did our solar logos benefit from a solar angelic, from a cosmic solar angelic intervention, just as man or animal man did? And is the Pleiadian is the Pleiadian influence more of the kind that prevails in a different type of individualization? In other words, the nurturing of mind, but not the giving of the spark of mind. Because the Pleiades are associated with the third aspect of divinity, primarily at first, and it was on the moon chain and also in the previous solar system that a different method of individualization was used. Maybe nothing was given per se, but there was an encouragement, a fanning, as it were. There was an evocation of mind. But with the solar angels, there was definitely a bestowal of a spark of mind. And so was there an analogy here? You know, if Venus and the Earth are twin sisters, were Sirius and Sol intended to be twin sisters? Because it seems that Sol is as far behind Sirius, this is an analogy, as Earth is behind Venus. So the Earth scheme failure, and specifically through the moon chain, delayed our solar logos as well. I mean, he may have been delayed for other reasons, but it seems that this was all part of the delay. This wrestling with the third aspect, which has already been successful on Venus and has been successful on Sirius, but has not been successful in our solar system and not on our Earth, not yet. So maybe we have different kinds of a different kind of approach to mind here. Is the source, and I'm going to say like this, was it a cosmic solar angelic conferral? Because there's no question, there is a higher solar angelic being for the solar logos. Do the planetary logoi have solar angels? I don't know. Maybe. But here we seem to have a direct intervention, and in the other case of the Pleiades, kind of an evocation. There are different methods of conferring mind, or a higher state of mind, or different methods of ensuring that a higher state of mind arises. One is by direct conferral, and the other is by drawing it forth. Are the Pleiades, in a way, drawing it forth, rather than having a direct bestowal? They certainly nurture mind. There is a psychic link between the planetary locus of Venus and that of our Earth, and this is the main theme. If it's a psychic link, it's a soul link. But the fifth ray soul of Venus and the second ray soul of Earth, well, there are going to be some similarities between those two rays of light. The brightest souls are on the second ray, but the most luminous ray lord is the fifth ray lord. The Venus scheme is more active than ours. And we can actually say, you know, how would we know? its humanity is more advanced than ours, right. And so the important thing is it does have a humanity which has successfully undergone transmutation. Whereas only one-fifth on Earth and two-fifths on Vulcan have done so. Its radiation includes the Buddhic plane as far as its humanity is concerned, so it has a Buddhic humanity. And we barely have a mental humanity. And of course, its own polarization on the cosmic astral plane, you know, having conquered the fifth from below and working on the sixth, which is Buddhic, is in advance of our planetary logos's astral work, which is hopefully relieving itself from the fourth and concentrating on the fifth, which Venus has already mastered. So Venus, in its monastic sense, is not a Buddhic planet and does rule higher mind, but in its Buddhic sense, having a sixth-ray monad and an ultimate second-ray monad, and since it's a sacred planet, these monadic rays should be expressive. It has a Buddhic quality. So, as I say, it will be active, I think, in the sixth root rays. The numbers correspond, and the Buddhic development, the intuitional development, will be there. Maybe by that time, Venus will be even more Buddhic, or will be able to share, maybe in our sixth root race, Venus will be able to share the Buddhic quality of its humanity with our humanity, which will be coming increasingly intuitional, straight-knowing, not having the cumbersome task of moving memories about in its consciousness in order to arrive at clarity. It could therefore open up through stimulation the same plane to our Earth humanity. Well, okay, that's what I'm trying to say. Venus and its humanity will be the guide towards Buddhi of our humanity, and will advanced human beings from Venus actually incarnate or come to our Earth? There's always a possibility. Some beings from Venus are already here, and in a way, some less advanced beings from Venus and from Jupiter, less advanced lotuses, are already here and are living on Earth and are coming under the name, Brahmic lotuses? Is that it? Or is it lotuses of Brahman? Let's check that out. All right. Maybe it's lotuses of Brahman? Yes. The lotus of Brahman, in which the second petal is showing signs of opening, and the second aspect in its lowest manifestation is showing up, showing signs of demonstration. They stand as representing certain groups of egos from certain planetary schemes, notably Jupiter and Venus, who are a grade higher than the Brahmic lotuses above, but which as yet have a long way to go, and they are here, and they are from Venus. So not all of the humanity of Venus is that advanced, just the way some of our humanity, I wonder, just realized something, just as some of our humanity will have to go to Mars after the Judgment Day. So was that the case with some of the Venusian humanity after their Judgment Day, which presumably is past? It could be an analogy there, and, you know, perhaps they were sent to Earth for further development. Development of what? Well, when you go to Mars after our Judgment Day, it's because you either have too little or too much mind. And when you, let's say, go to Earth after the Judgment Day of Venus, why would that be? Too little love? Too much unwise love? Too little light? Too much of the wrong kind of light? Inability to discriminate between the pairs of opposites? There's always a remedial school available, if we need it. And all the various planetary spheres are schools. Venus is the second or the sixth scheme, according to whether the schemes are counted mystically or occultly, and, you know, we have that. There it is. So, you know, this is the first scheme, but here's Venus on the second. So shall we count in this way? DK may have mixed up the words. If we, now, this is simply a map, but if we go clockwise, it will be the sixth scheme. If we go counterclockwise, it will be the second scheme. Whatever it is, it has both the sixth and second ray. Mystically, I suppose it is the sixth scheme. Let's check that. Mystically, it is the sixth scheme, going the clockwise direction from Vulcan, you know, 7543, you know, etc., like that. And occultly, it is the second ray monad here, and in a way here, sixth ray monad, a lesser monad. We all have two monads, I've come to the conclusion, or at least one may be the expression or sub-expression of the other. So if you look here, you see it, Vulcan Venus, and that's perhaps the occult direction. And the ultimate second ray monad would be there. But Vulcan, Jupiter, Mercury, Earth, Mars, Venus. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2. Sixth scheme counted mystically, perhaps. Can we associate mysticism? We associate mysticism with the clockwise wheel and occultism with the counterclockwise wheel. Maybe. I always thought this was an interesting statement. And somehow I liked to think of Venus as the, well, you know, there's a question of the sixth globe or the second globe. Questions regarding the sixth globe or the second globe are also needed. Because if we go back one diagram, we will see that while Venus is the second chain and we have no opportunity here for clockwise or counterclockwise, there is a sixth globe from which in the Earth chain, it's in the Venus chain of the Earth scheme. Definitely it is the sixth that is on its way to, three lines go forth to the second or Venus globe, the fourth or Earth globe, and the fifth or Mercury globe. There's a lot of occultism buried in that, and I hope that I was fairly meticulous in dealing with it when I was writing these things up. But let's just say, at first, there is much devotion connected with Venus, of a very high kind, a very high ideal of beauty and truth and spirituality. And later it turns out to be the second ray love wisdom monad. But temporarily, at this moment, it's the home of the planetary logos of the sixth ray. And when you use a word like home or use the word esoteric, watch for the monad. When a word like home or esoteric is used, watch for the possible indication of the monad. Venus, we looked at this, is negatively polarized, and hence it became possible for a mysterious absorption by the Earth of Venusian force. The karmic tie between the two planetary logoi, one in a positive incarnation and the other in a negative, caused a planetary alliance, and light flashed forth. Well, we're told that Venus is in a feminine incarnation, and Earth in a masculine incarnation. So there was an absorption of Venusian force, but there was also a great bestowal, we're told, whereas the absorption by the Earth of Venusian force influenced our globe, particularly. The absorption of Tellurian or Earth force by Venus influenced an entire chain. Was it the sixth chain? Sometimes when you say six, you have to think of two. Was it the sixth or the second? I suppose it depends on which way we're counting. But the important thing is that Earth gave even more than it received. That is the point. We'll have the chance to live the more Venusian life in the third decanate of Aquarius, and many human beings coming into the Aquarian age under Venus from 30 to 20 degrees of Aquarius will have the chance to come under this type of force, maybe not in as high a way as later in the very last part of the Aquarian age. The Lord of Venus holds place in the Logoic Quaternary. Thus, is the heart center, I always get that wrong, heart center to be included, or shall we look at the personality as indicated by sub-diaphragmatic centers? I believe that at this time, Venus is the correspondence of the solar plexus center of the solar logos, and thus would definitely be part of a logoic QTY, Q quaternary, QTRY, quaternary. I'll do that. QTY, QT. Oh, I should really remember that. Quaternary. So is the heart center to be included? You know, because the four lower chakras are, do include the heart, but it's super diaphragmatic, and generally the heart has such a connection with advancement and with the Buddhic plane and with the love energy and with the soul that it's hard to consider it as part of the Logoic Quaternary. The personality is that elemental life which forces the fires of the body to feed the lower centers. The personality is in a way sub-diaphragmatic, and the moon, in one sense, rules the solar plexus. So if Venus is the ruler of the solar plexus and Mars the rule of the sacral center, Earth, the base of the spine, it also has a connection with ether, what shall be the spleen? Or shall the union of those three vehicles, Mars as the mental elemental, Venus as the astral elemental, and Earth as the physical elemental, all combined into a fourth elemental, will that be sufficient? In other words, is Venus part of the solar logoic personality? Venus part of the solar logoic personality. the position of the heart center above the diaphragm and yet one of the lower four complicates the issue. What is the quaternary for man? Well, you know, it's generally ruled by the non-sacred planets. The moon is the outer form. The earth is the etheric body, or represents. Mars, the astral body. Pluto, the mental body. And the sun, in the ahamkaric sense, the lower personality. What other planets? Earth must be part of the lower quaternary. Mars, Pluto. And is there chakric space for that? Let's look here, and we'll see whether Earth, logoic, quaternary. The Lord of Venus holds place in the logoic quaternary, as does the Lord of the Earth. Well, maybe we don't have to consider these in chakric terms. Maybe we could consider the mental body of the Logos, lower mental body, as Mercurian, the astral body as Venusian. Maybe not. Maybe the astral body will have to be considered Martian. Well, there's two ways of doing this. One involves looking at the chakras, and the other involves looking at the lower vehicles. Who rules the lower mental vehicle? What rules the lower mental vehicle of the Earth, of the solar logos? Is it Mercury? Does Venus rule the astral vehicle? Does Earth rule the etheric vehicle in some way? Does Mars rule the dense physical vehicle? That is another way of doing it. Another quaternary, another view of the logoic quaternary. Aha, that's what I'm going to do. Excuse me for a second. Logoic quaternary. No. LQ. LQ. Right, another view of the logoic quaternary. And maybe it should be, would have Mercury ruling the lower mental body, Venus the astral body, Earth the etheric body, which, remember, is directly related to the base of the spine center, and Mars, the physical body, which is directly related to the sacral center. So that is a possible assignment. Now, there are not the etheric body is, the base of the spine is directly related to the etheric body. But there are two chakras there, the spleen and the base of the spine, and the Earth cannot be both, even though it has a connection with the etheric body. Mars, though, is crude and dense and sacral and related, I think, to the dense physical body of the solar logos. So that is an interesting way of looking at that, and maybe, I don't know if I've thought of that before. See, there's not an exact correspondence. You can't just take four chakras and four elementals. And then what would be the union of all of those together? We've run out of visible non-sacred planets. We couldn't include Pluto. Pluto definitely has a connection with the base of the spine. But there's a higher solar plexus and a lower. And I've sometimes thought that Venus represents the higher point in the solar plexus, Earth represents the lower. But now we're talking about points in a center and not the center itself. Well, its sixth ray monad and its fifth ray sol makes it possible to associate Venus with the solar plexus, which is the fifth chakra distributing the sixth ray. Mars is a sexual planet related to the sacral center, and the sacral center produces dense physical vehicle, and Mars rules the dense physical body. Earth is the base of the spine, either now or to be, and the base of the spine is directly related to the etheric body, both ruled by the number four, interestingly. Pluto also might have a connection to the base of the spine, but it has some connection to Hades and to the solar plexus, I think. Well, anyway, the logoic quaternary, the lower quaternary is the personality, and it's a fourfold structure, and if we divide the etheric and physical, it turns out to be a fivefold structure. And what would represent the union of these four aspects in a five? There are only three elementals, a mental elemental in the lower sense, an astral elemental, and a physical elemental. We don't talk about an etheric elemental. Maybe the elemental of the physical elemental somehow includes the etheric body, but often the etheric body is in a separate category. So we're trying to make our numbers add up here. And I'll just drop it at that, noticing the discrepancy between assigning chakras and assigning vehicles. There is a difficult discrepancy. Different tabulations become possible when assigning chakras to the solar logos and assigning lower vehicles to the solar logos. See, Mercury has a very strong Ajna center connection, I think, in the solar logos, and is connected with the little bear. Venus will have a heart center connection, but then what of Jupiter? I think presently Jupiter is that heart. It has such an association with the number 12. Venus does not yet. And Venus has this from the soul angle, it has the fifth ray. I don't think we can yet assign it to the Ajna center. It's not powerful enough or old enough to be the Ajna center of the solar logos. There's definitely a heart connection. The question is it impending? And will Venus move up through the ranks of chakric functions into the heart when Jupiter moves on, and then maybe Neptune moves on altogether? Well, I go around and round on this one. It all has to do with Venus being the presently upholding the solar plexus function, chakric function, within the solar logos. Saturn apparently the throat, Jupiter apparently the heart, Uranus apparently the head, Neptune apparently the heart and the head, Vulcan apparently the seven head centers, and maybe also the jewels and the lotuses of all the chakras. We have the triad, the soul, and the quaternary. It seems like Jupiter could be associated in some way with the causal body of the solar logos, but then I think a very great being, a solar angel, of a cosmic kind, is responsible for that. Well, ponder on this. Maybe it'll come later. The way to straighten all this out, straighten these assignments out. See, some people will automatically put Venus in the heart of the solar logos. But then the question arises about the lower quaternary. Should the heart be included in the lower quaternary, or should only subdiaphragmatic chakras, of which there are four, be included in the lower quaternary? Look at man. We have our mental body. The mental elemental is in the sacral nature. We have our solar plexus, our astral body, and the astral elemental is associated with the solar plexus. We have the base of the spine, physical elemental. There's an association there. And then all three together could be perhaps connected with Mercury, unifying them as the personality. Mercury giving the number four. So is it possible then that we could be looking at Venus, Mars, Earth, with Mercury, the synthesizer? Mercury standing for the human personality in this case. So is somehow, is Mercury part of the logoic quaternary? We would have Mercury. It's definitely not subdiaphragmatic, but then it's not in the man either. We have a difficulty finding the place that Mercury rules in the man. Later, it rules the brow center. Mercury, Venus, Mars, Earth, in the man. No, in the solar logos. But in the man, we might have to resort to the non-sacred planets. We have, starting in the same way, the lower quaternary, Mercury, Mars, Earth, Pluto. Pluto being, in a way, the, well, let's call it Moon. And here we have Pluto for man representing the mental body. Mental body. And Mars, the astral body. And Earth, the etheric body. And Moon, the dense physical body. Here we're able to split the lower part. All synthesized by what? All synthesized by the Sun. Well, Mercury and the Sun are one. So this is man's lower quaternary, and attempting to take a look at the solar logoic, or the logoic quaternary. Well, I seem to have gone over. I certainly have gone over. So this is the end of Esoteric Astrology 157b. Page, not too much progress on the pages. Page 674. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 1, it's 158, what really it is. 158C, page 674. All right, and I've got to go up to 13 minutes. This is a little problematic.